Now let's look at the effects of prenatal nutritional quality on puppies. Prenatal nutrition affects puppies in many ways. In the short term, nutrition partially determines litter size, the pup's neural development, and birth weight, the most significant determinant of neonatal survival. Over the long haul, it impacts puppy trainability, vision, immune systems, and lifetime cancer rates. So what are the basic requirements of a diet designed for the reproductive needs of dog parents and puppies? If you're feeding an AFCO-certified diet, look for one made for reproduction or all life stages. In addition, all breeders need to ensure their breeding dogs' diets have the following macronutrients. 29% or more dry weight of animal-based protein. That could be from kibble, canned, dehydrated, cooked, or a meat bone raw diet. Dogs are by definition and classification carnivores, so their digestive tract is designed to better handle animal proteins than plants. Unlike cats, but similar to their fellow canids, wolves, coyotes, and foxes, they can digest some plant products, but the amino acid profiles that dogs thrive on are of animal origin, meat, poultry, or fish. To determine if the food you're feeding is animal-based, look at the first four ingredients on the label. If three of the first four are animal protein, then you're good to go. Dogs vary in how many carbohydrates they need in their diet, based on their breed and the activities they participate in. They only really need carbohydrates twice in their lives, during reproduction and weaning. Carbs should make up at least 20% of the calories in the diet of a breeding bitch. This is no problem if you feed a kibble, since all kibbles, even the grain-free products, have more than 20% carbohydrates. However, if you feed a commercial raw, a dehydrated or freeze-dried product, or you make your dog's food, then you'll need to be sure to add carbs to her diet. Carbohydrates come from plant sources such as vegetables, fruits, and grains are often the easiest to use, but feed what your dog does best on. And finally, prenatal nutrition should consist of at least 18% fat from animal or plant fats and oils. So those are the macronutrients required of a reproduction diet. There are also many micronutrients that dogs need to be healthy, and these include omega-3 fatty acids, probiotics, and an array of vitamins and minerals. We'll start with docosahexaenoic acid, or DHA, a very important omega-3 fatty acid. This is one of the most important omega-3s for dogs, promoting normal gene expression and neuroprotection. DHA comes from cold water fish, algae, and krill. Now, those sources really caused confusion for me. I could understand why my breed, Golden Retrievers, which arose in Scotland, might have evolved to need DHA to be their healthiest. But I struggled to understand why a desert breed, say like Salukis, would have evolved to need something that came from cold water fish. That just didn't make sense to me, since if people in the Middle East got access to cold water fish, they probably weren't feeding them to their dogs. It wasn't until I learned that DHA is found in much higher levels in grass-fed meats than in grain-fed meats that I understood. Over the centuries, dogs have gotten DHA from their or their owners' prey. That would be mice, rabbits, gazelles, deer. The reason we need to supplement our dogs' diets with DHA is that animals fed grains, that's where we get most of the protein that our dogs eat today, have much lower levels of DHA than in the past. Now, one place dogs can't get DHA is from flax. Dogs do not efficiently convert the fatty acids in flax, linoleic acid and alpha-linoleic acid, to DHA, so you can leave off the flax. What are the benefits of supplementing our dog's diet with DHA? Well, this important omega-3 fatty acid affects brain, particularly the cerebral cortex, skin, if you've got stud dogs, sperm and testicles, and retinal development. The AFCO hasn't yet set a daily requirement for DHA in dogs. The recommended dosing, depending upon the reason for supplementation, varies from 14 to 168 milligrams per pound body weight daily. In our breeding program, we supplement with 15 milligrams per pound of body weight of DHA every day for the life of our dogs. If you make your own food or feed a food without supplements, be sure to add a small amount of vitamin E to your dog's food. Check the additional resources for the formula you'll need to determine how much. And finally, remember that omega-3 fatty acids like DHA are very fragile. They're easily oxidized if they're exposed to light, heat, or air. Many also contain heavy metals and other toxins. Tests have shown that many human fish oil supplements not only are oxidized, but also contain only about 65% of the DHA listed on the label. When you select your dog supplements, be sure to buy from a reputable company. Ask to see their product's independent analysis showing the purity, and discuss the steps they take to ensure their product is fresh when you get it. And then you be sure to store all the oils you use in dark, cool places. Last module, we were introduced to our dog's microbiome, which consists of the trillions of beneficial bacteria that live in our dogs. Although we usually associate the microbiome with the digestive tract, they also live in our dog's skin, the lining of the nasal passages, lungs, and urogenital tracts. Without these bacteria, our dogs would die. Now, puppies are born with a sterile gut. They don't have a microbiome. But during the birth process, their microbiomes start to develop. Over the next few days, their bodies become populated with bacteria from breast milk, vaginal secretions, and the surfaces that they touch. These bacteria help the puppy digest. They tutor its immune system, teaching it to identify friend from foe. They help protect it from harmful bacteria. And recent research indicates that the microbiome may even have an effect on behavior. Now, there's two kinds of supplements for the microbiome. Prebiotics, which contain nutrients that feed the microbiome, and probiotics, which are actual living bacteria that are thought to be beneficial. Research into probiotic supplements is mixed, but one study really stands out for me. Two groups of puppies were given a single distemper vaccine. One group was fed a normal diet, while the other was fed the same diet plus probiotics. At the end of a year, the pups in the probiotic group had higher immunity against distemper than the control group. So probiotics are more than a digestive aid. They're an immune booster. We recommend feeding probiotics to dog moms based on the human research, which shows that supplementing a mother's diet enables early colonization of a newborn's gut with beneficial bacteria. And this colonization appears to be relatively stable. In humans, it's 6 months or even longer, allowing a normal, mature microbiome to be gradually established. However, we have to be careful where we get our dog's probiotics to. A Canadian study of the dog foods that, quote, contain probiotics, found that none contained all of the bacteria listed on the label. Their conclusion, and I quote, overall, commercial pet foods that claim to contain probiotics appear to contain very low numbers of viable organisms and often do not contain the species listed on the label, end quote. So consider supplementing with probiotics rather than depending upon dog food to provide these beneficial bacteria to your dog. Finally, let's discuss vitamins and minerals. Now, there's an awful lot of these, and we are not going to go through all of them. We're just going to hit a few high points. One of the most important things to know is that, like many things in life, vitamin and mineral dosing follows what's known as an inverted U-shaped curve. So in this chart, we see increasing benefit from the bottom to the top on the left side, and we see increasing dosing across the bottom from left to right. Too little and too much of a vitamin or mineral both cause problems, while the optimal amount provides the most benefit. How can you figure out how much of each vitamin and mineral your dog needs? Well, we have a number of excellent sources available. The AFCO standards, published every few years by the Association of American Feed Control Officers, and those provided by the National Research Council, most recently published in 2006. One of the most well-known epigenetic nutrients is vitamin B9, or folate. The man-made version you might be familiar with is folic acid. For years, we've known that supplementing pregnant women and dogs with folate decreases neural tube defects, cleft palates, and anemia. Too much folic acid, although not studied in dogs, is thought to increase gastrointestinal cancers in humans. But the good thing about folic acid is it has a very wide safety margin, from about 400 micrograms to over 5 milligrams per day in dogs. There's even one Beagle study showing benefits at 20 milligrams per day. Those benefits from this vitamin include healthy pups, protection from bisphenol A or BPA, which you know comes from plastic, and better lactation. Most websites recommend supplementation for bitches with at least 400 micrograms per day, but the research in dogs relating to reducing cleft palate rates used 5 milligrams per day, even in toy breeds. These studies are in the additional research section of Module 3, so check them out if you're interested. Presently, the AFCO standard for all life stages food is only 2 micrograms per pound of food. If you've had problems with cleft palates or other neural tube defects in your dogs, you have a breed predisposed to these issues, or if you simply want to avoid them in the first place, consider supplementing from the first day your bitch comes in season, at least through day 42 after ovulation. If you want the other benefits, such as protection from BPA and improved lactation, consider supplementing through weaning. Folate is a water-soluble vitamin, and so your bitch will simply secrete out what she doesn't need. The easiest and safest way to supplement a dog's diet with folate is to use a human folate or folic acid supplement available at grocery stores and drug stores everywhere. Folate's also found in grass-fed meats, there's a theme there, liver, and dark leafy greens. But be cautious using liver. However, since we'll see in the next slide, this can cause other imbalances in dogs. And so, talking about giving pregnant bitches liver brings up another vitamin, and that's vitamin A. Mice whose mothers were fed too little vitamin A were missing a critical part of their immune system called the lymphoid tissue inducer, or LTI. No treatment, including bone marrow transplants, could restore the baby mice to health. However, too much vitamin A can increase the rates of cleft palates, the very thing we were trying to avoid by feeding folic acid. And yes, you've guessed it, liver has high levels of vitamin A in it. For example, 3 ounces of chicken liver has 4,250 international units of vitamin A. So if you're adding more than that to your dog's commercial diet, you may be giving her too much vitamin A. However, luckily, like folate, vitamin A has a wide safety margin, so it's pretty easy to get the right amount into our breeding dogs. The recommended dose is 5,000 international units, or IUs, per day, and the AFCO standard for all life stages food is between 5,000 to 25,000 IU per kilogram of food. Now, before we get into general thoughts about dog food, let me ask you, is coffee good for you? Well, let's take a look at headlines from a one-week period in November of 2015. Study finds more evidence coffee can be a lifesaver. And then, a week later, coffee may not be as healthy as researchers previously claimed. What? If we don't know what human beings should eat, we certainly don't know what dogs should eat. So what to do about nutrition? First thing we have to recognize, there is still a lot we don't know about feeding dogs. Yes, we have good dog foods on the market, but the standards are focused on adequate nutrition rather than optimal. Dogs need to survive AFCO feeding trials rather than thrive during them. In addition, we must accept that we know even less about the nutritional requirements of breeding dogs and baby puppies. We do have some research available, both long-standing and new. The early research differs from present day by one key factor. Much of it was independent. Today, all nutritional research is funded by dog food companies. Now, mind you, I read and use all of that research, and I am eternally grateful to the dog food companies for doing it, because it's very, very expensive. But I also never forget their going-in assumptions and goals, which may not be the same as ours. Because of the changing recommendations on dog nutrition, we recommend every dog get a one-a-day supplement. You can agree or not, but if you do, pick your favorite and give it pretty regularly. We've used and sold ProBalance Canine Wellness for 15 years after the late Dr. David Kronfeld, one of the great veterinary nutritionists, recommended it to us. One of the reasons I like it is that ProBalance has an array of amino acids in it, ensuring that our dogs' bodies have access to all of the protein building blocks that they need. Now, a warning to you home-cooked food folks. If you make your dog's food, especially for puppies or breeding dogs, you have to educate yourself. Last year, I heard about a litter with rickets due to a poorly made homemade diet. It's one thing to decide the diet of an adult dog. It's a whole other thing to properly feed stud dogs, pregnant and lactating bitches, and growing puppies. Luckily, there's a growing number of veterinary services offering diets designed by veterinary nutritionists for your dogs. If nothing else, have them confirm the appropriateness of your diet before you feed it. And finally, we all need to keep careful records about what we feed from breeding on, linking it to lifetime litter outcomes. These outcomes include how well pregnancy and whelping went, the size of litters, birth weights of puppies, neonate and puppy health, orthopedics, and then, of course, lifetime health.